'Twas in the town of Jacksboro in the spring of 73. A man by the name of Kriegel come stepping up to me. Said, how do you do, young fellas, and how'd you like to go and spend one summer pleasantly on the range of the buffalo? It's me being out of employment, old Kriegel, I did say. This going out on the buffalo range depends upon the pay.
Once again, that is the one and only Pete Seeger from a relatively rare CD. CDs are rare now. I understand new cars, most new cars don't even have CD players because you use your phone and plug in your phone. I'm playing Pete Seeger because Monday is Labor Day, and Labor Day is not just about barbecues and going to the beach. It's about work, celebration of workers and unions and the incredible fight for the eight-hour day, a lot of which took place here. We were trying to get Bill Page on the phone to talk about his new book, Everything I Know I Learned from Rock Stars. Pretty intriguing title, is it not? But we can't find him. I think he's in Texas. Who knows? So instead, I get to interview my great friend and a man I admire beyond words, Richard Lindbergh. Hello, Richard.
Rick, nice to see you.
How are you? It's always good to see you.
It's been a while, but I'm happy to be back.
Well, it's been a while because one of the problems is the publishing business these days does not lend itself, as it did in the old days, to being able to write a book every couple of years. The publishing business is crazy now, isn't it?
It is, and there's fewer opportunities, fewer publishers, fewer chances are taken on edgy books or books of specialized subject matter, and it's a pretty bleak landscape for somebody who has not published, who is trying to break in for the first time.
Oh, must be impossible. I mean, it just literally now must be impossible. The last time we talked, you've written pushing nearly 20 books about Chicago history and politics and crime and criminal justice and sports. I think the last time we talked, it was about you. I think the book was a very honest memoir titled Whiskey Breakfast, My Swedish Family, My American Life. That was not an easy book to write, was it?
Well, that is my favorite book of everything I've done.
It should be.
It was a 22-year writing project. To get it right, to rewrite it three or four times, to have a publisher tell me we got to rewrite it several more times. And it was a true labor of love. I'm hopeful of someday taking that book and getting it published in Sweden, where it should be republished.
Yeah.
But that, too, is a very difficult thing these days.
Well, it also is a book that was in the writing basically your entire life, in a sense.
Yeah, it truly was.
In a sense. Not always a pleasant sense, but in
right.
a sense.
Right.
Your latest book, of which I have not even seen it. I am seeing it for the first time. It's like a coming out party for the book. It is called Northeastern Illinois University, The First 150 Years. Maybe, Richard, not as snappy a title as Whiskey Breakfast, but it tells the story. I had no idea that you, my friend, were a graduate of Northeastern.
I'll tell you something, Rick. Never thought college was in my future.
You were the first in your family to ever go to college.
Yes, of course, and I had no money.
But that's kind of generational about Chicago, yeah. too. I'd also like to welcome, and you can't see in here, I guess you can see on TV, Richard's pal and colleague, Mike Dizon, is it?
That's right, Mike Dizon.
He's
a former Tribune employee.
Really? What did you do here, Mike?
I worked here from 1995 to 2009. I started off in editorial covering Springfield. And the
I knew your name sounded familiar. And then you went straight. Then you got like a real job.
A real job. I moved to the marketing department, and then I became the spokesperson for the media spokesperson for the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune-based properties.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, what a nightmare. It feels so good to be back here.
Hey, I'm surprised you're not in a mental institution. You are now the co-chair of the Sesquicentennial Committee at Northeastern Illinois. Do you work for the university?
I work for the university. I'm currently their chief marketing and communications officer. The nice thing about Northeastern is that the university's mission is so similar to the Tribune companies or Chicago Tribune's mission too, so it was an easy transition.
That's great. Are you having fun up there?
Oh, absolutely. And Rich knows very well. Just the spirit of the university, the unique audience that it serves. It's very gratifying to be a part of that.
Well, it's also a very, very diverse student body. Richard, when you were a young man in your senior year of high school trying to figure out what you wanted to do with your life, and you just said before we talked to Mike, you were toying with college?
It was not in the cards for me. I didn't think at the time. I came from a broken home. My mother, blue-collar depression in her family. When I announced to her that I would like to go to college, she looked at me in sheer disbelief, masked with horror. Well, nobody's going to college. We can't afford that. Nobody had, and my dad, who had considerable money and everything, he refused, didn't want to send me. And I just had a vague notion about, well, gee, I really want to do this. And I had a high school teacher at Taft High School who came up to me one day and she said, are you going to college? And I said, I don't think so. And she said, why not? I said, well, it's a variety of reasons. I really got to go to work. And she says, well, Richard, you know, you write, and you have a future in writing, maybe journalism, and you should do that. And she lit that fire underneath me. And then I explored ways to go to college. Northeastern was the very first college I applied for because two things. One, it was very close to where I worked.
Yeah.
I had to work 30 hours a week. I had to pay room and board and to support my mom. But I still wanted to go to college. So it was connecting the bus routes because I worked at Sears Roebuck at Six Corners. And sadly enough, that really factored into my decision. But Northeastern was the most affordable option. And to this day, Northeastern Illinois University, that is a high consideration for a lot of blue-collar families.
No question, Mike. I mean, you must see that on a constant basis these days. You know, it used to be, you know, Circle used to get a little of that, yeah. I think.
Right.
But, you know, certainly Northwestern, the big-name schools in the area, Northwestern, DePaul, Loyola, those are all private and expensive kinds of places. Does the university still have a lot of first-time family members going to college?
That's what we're known for.
Wow.
In fact, we serve a fairly unique population here in Chicagoland. Yes, it's true. Many of our students are not only first in their families to attend college, but they're non-traditional in that they tend to skew a little bit older. They're not typically what you think of when you think of college students, the 18 to 22-year-old students. We have a lot of those.
Oh, sure.
But these are folks who are working part-time. Many of them are commuting, some of whom are actually living on campus now that we have a residence.
You have residences there?
The very first opened up this past year.
Oh, my God. How has that changed the campus life?
Oh, it was transformative.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we were the last public university here in Illinois to have residence halls. Well, we finally got it. And that was in large part because our students were telling us, many of our prospective students were telling us, look, I'd really like to go to Northeastern, but I need a place to live.
Yeah.
Part of the thing, Rick, is that Northeastern has traditionally been seen since its inception as a commuter school. When I started, it was essentially a school where you were expected to graduate and teach in the public school system of Chicago.
Yeah.
It was a teacher's college. And it was a college that was known for accepting students who couldn't afford the other institutions.
It was in, I haven't read your book, but it was in Englewood then, was it?
Well, initially.
It started in Blue Island?
It started in Blue Island. It was called a Cook County Normal School. And by definition.
Normal meaning what?
Normal is a derivative of the École Normale, which was a French school.
I think.
Yeah. And essentially, it was a word for teacher college.
Yeah.
And the term has fallen into the vapors of history. In fact, the last exclusive normal school in the United States closed, I think, in 1971. Mm. Because all the normal schools of that era are essentially today state universities.
Interesting. We got to take a break, but we're going to talk for quite some time here. Mike Dizon, thank you for being here. Former Tribune Company employee, we're now called Trunk. And Richard Lindbergh, one of the most prolific and best authors writing in Chicago. Richard's book, his latest, is Northeastern Illinois University, The First 150 Years. We'll talk about how this book came to be, the whole notion of celebrating a sesquicentennial. And also, especially for you, Mike, and you too, Richard, sort of identifying and giving a personality to Northeastern Illinois in the midst of all these big, flashy colleges. Do you know what I mean? It's how do you distinguish yourself? And I think this book will go a long way to do that. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
We're brave and gallant miner boys who work in underground. For courage and good nature, no finer can be found. We work both late and early and get but little pay.
Welcome back. I am talking for the next, for at least 40 minutes with my friend Richard Lindbergh, my former colleague Mike Dizon. Mike's the co-chair of the Sesquicentennial Committee at Northeastern Illinois University, and Richard is the author of, I've just thumbed through this incredibly handsome book, Northeastern Illinois University, The First 150 Years. Richard is a esteemed graduate of the school. You met your wife there, too. I didn't know that.
Yes.
So it's like the most full-service university in the Midwest, isn't
it? Well, it changed my life. It really did.
How so? It changed your life in the way that college should change your life, correct?
Well, if I didn't go to Northeastern, quite honestly, I would probably be working in a factory on Northwest Highway up in the northwest side of Chicago.
Yeah.
My mother, that's the future she saw for me. My father was indifferent, and, it was essentially high school to work, and that was it. And I just looked upon it as kind of a bleak existence. And I thought to myself, there had to be more. And then when I realized all my friends were going to college, I made a concerted effort. I applied to Northeastern. I was admitted.
Do you remember, Richard? Do you remember what you felt like the first day of school? I know it's a silly question, but do you remember what you felt like the first day
over
of school?
I was in awe. The first class I took was I was involved in debate in high school, and I took a debate class at North. My very first college experience, and it was filled with seniors, and they are really into the technical aspect of debate, and we had never gotten that in depth in high school, and these guys were smoking pipes, and they actually. they had the pants.
Sounds like the University of Chicago, yeah.
Right. And I thought, oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into? And I dropped that class immediately, so it was a rough start. But then I
wound up majoring in history.
There was nothing else I could have majored in. History has been my love since I was 5 years old. My love of Chicago history began in high school, and it accelerated. And I went back and got my master's degree from Northeastern in the 1980s because I needed the credentials to publish.
Yeah.
Because my goal was to publish history, and I needed a master's degree. And it was, again, a part-time thing. I was working full-time, and I took one course a semester, 8 years.
Mike, you've been there for 3 years. So this project came to you when it had already started, correct?
That's right. I think most of it was finished, or all of it was, Richard.
How did the book start, Richard? I mean, how?
The book started through a very close friend and mentor whose name was Dr. Bernard Brommel. He is one of the top two individuals who have donated so much money. In fact, the science building on campus is named Brommel Hall.
Wow.
He was a professor of mine in my senior year in speech. He was a speech professor. And he has kind of mentored me along. He got me involved with the Society of Midland Authors. He's a published author, wrote an exceptional biography. And he said, Richard, you have to write this history. No one else can do it but you.
Was it his idea? Or, I mean, it's, you know, okay, 150 years, it's a logical kind of landmark birthday to do. Was it his idea?
It was his idea. He had it in his mind. He called me up one day. He says, Richard, I want you to write the history of Northeastern.
And I guess if you've given a building to the university, you can sort of say, yes, I have another.
And
I know you love to write.
Yeah.
This is in its fashion, and now, frankly, seeing the book, it may seem like, well, oh, that's not going to be too hard. This is a daunting. It's a daunting project. You, any second thoughts before starting this, or because of your affection for the school and for history, you jump at it?
Well, I did it with affection for the school, but with great reservation. Because first I said, I always call Dr. Brommel Bernie. I said, does the university really want to do this? And he said, well, of course they do. I says, well, I haven't heard from the president, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. And she gave the go-ahead, and I had a meeting with her, and she said, let's do it. We don't have a history. At that time, it was so long ago, we didn't even know what the anniversary would be to bring it out. And then it crystallized that it was going to be 150 years. And the archives were fragmentary in terms of the early years of the Cook County Normal School.
Normal School.
But the framework and the backbone, and I must say this unabashedly, was the Chicago Tribune. The first thing I did was I said, I need to build.
This is where Mike and I come into the story.
I need to build the skeleton. I always look at a book as a skyscraper.
Sure.
You dig the hole, you put in the beams, and that's what I did. And I searched the Chicago Tribune archives back to the 1850s, and I worked forward. Constantly working forward, moving forward to the modern era.
What was there much about it? I just got Mike Dizon has just brought me my copy of the book, and I'll devour it over the next week. But was there much about the early years?
No, there wasn't really. At least it was shrouded in a lot of myth and mystery. There was an apocryphal story that said that the first classes were held inside of a railroad boxcar in Blue Island. So I'm searching.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. That this is how it got started.
You know, Mike, that's like too good to be true.
in a little town called Blue Island that was essentially a country town, a very pastoral, beautiful setting that would later become absorbed into Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I could find no evidence of that, and I frankly never determined where that story came from, but it had gained currency. Instead, what really happened was that the normal school movement began in the East Coast and was inspired by educator Horace Mann, mm-hmm. who had studied the new and evolving theories of education from Germany. And that involved essentially changing the way children are taught. In the 19th century, it was rote memorization. You learned by memorizing Shakespeare and formulas, and you read aloud, and you repeated, and you memorized. Horace Mann and his disciples decided that there needed to be more creative thinking and more individualism in bringing out the talents of the individual student. And this was the revolutionary change in American education.
Let me ask you, you guys are going to be on for a long time. I haven't read the book. But wasn't Francis Parker, the educator Francis Parker, who has a school named after him, a school that could put 50 kids through Northeastern, I'm assuming, with that tuition, and a very innovative educator, wasn't he involved with Northeastern Illinois University?
He was the second, at that time they were called principals. He was the second principal of Northeastern. He succeeded Mr. Wentworth, no relation to John Wentworth.
Right, right. I'm just gonna ask.
But he came in 1883, and he continued the evolving mission of Wentworth, that we were going to create an educational model that was separate and apart. He called it the Quincy Method, which was his work in Quincy, Massachusetts.
He was an innovative.
He was innovative and he was controversial.
Guy. Yeah, exactly.
And he had a tremendous amount of political opposition from the city politicians and the Cook County politicians.
Oh, I can't wait to read about this guy.
And you know, we even bring in people like Mike McDonald and some of the crooks into this story.
Fantastic. how could you not? Yeah, have you ever? Yeah, I don't think Mike McDonald was in Whiskey Breakfast, but he's been a featured character in many of your books. I will carry on with these two nice guys. Mike Dyson is the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for Northeastern Illinois University, and Richard Lindbergh, the prolific author, has written what looks like, and it's a beautiful book, Northeastern Illinois University, the First 150 Years. We'll talk to them a great deal more about the book, and I want to talk to Mike about how one markets a university in this day and age. And in this particular environment where you've got, you know, hi, I want to build a new basketball arena, so here's $25 million, DePaul. And it's a very competitive market, is it not?
Oh, you know it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about that. And I think this book will help distinguish Northeast Illinois University, Richard Lindbergh's new book. So please stay tuned. These gentlemen are going to stay for a while. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com.
Way back yonder in Tennessee, they leased the convicts out, sent them working in the mines.
Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. That's the voice of Pete Seeger singing American Industrial Ballads from a relatively rare CD. I am in here for at least another half hour with Mike Dyson. That's what I'm still saying, right? He is the Chief Marketing Communications Officer for Northeastern Illinois University, and Richard Lindbergh, who has given Mike what I think is an incredible marketing tool by having written the hot-off-the-presses, handsome-as-hell book, Northeastern Illinois University, the First 150 Years. Mike, you've only been at the university for about 3 years, so you came on while this project was about 2 years old, while Richard is in some basement sweating out the details.
Sweating out the details
and trying to write. Richard, a very prolific and unbelievably talented writer. Did you immediately sense how this kind of thing could help you marketing this university?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even before I came to Northeastern, I was sort of shocked and surprised at just how long the institution had been around. 150 years says a lot, doesn't it? It tells us that, you know, this is an institution that has a lot of stability. It has a history, very deep roots in Chicago and the community. And I think as you read this, as you read the book, like I have, and I was just telling you off the air, boy, it is an incredible book. And I have to believe that it couldn't have been easy to write and research it, but it, from the reader's perspective, it's incredibly easy to go through, and it's just the way it's written, Rich's style of writing. I plowed through it in about 2.5 nights.
Well, yeah, I think you're really right. You're now great in addition to all your other professions and jobs. You're a great book critic too. It also will do, I think, a remarkable job. Plus, just the notion of the celebration in that. A lot of, for generations, a lot of the people going to Northeastern were commuters. They don't have that sort of tie that people who lived on campus have. Don't you think this will reaffirm for a lot of people the importance of this university in their minds and their lives?
I think you can't help but read this book, especially from a graduate's perspective,
exactly.
A member of the alumni, not to really feel that strong affinity for Northeastern Illinois University, knowing that you were a part of that history, no matter where in time you joined it. Whether it was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whenever, there's something in the book for you and that you can relate to. And even if you don't have that affiliation with the university, it's an important Chicago record.
No question. I think that you've hit on something. And, Richard, that had to be one of the underlying appeals of this book to you, because you are Chicago's historian, man. And
thank you.
No, I know you are. And that this is such a tale of Chicago as well as a place in Chicago.
Well, when I realized that there had not been a substantive history beyond a few research papers, dissertations, and pamphlets, I looked upon this as an opportunity to do a deep dig, an archaeological dig, if you will, into forgotten history, which is something I love to do. Moreover, it was the sense of loyalty to the university and the sense of gratitude I had for giving me that chance back in 1971 to become an undergraduate.
But also giving the university its due, because, again, I have not yet read the book. It's sitting here handsomely on this desk. But what it did for you, it obviously did the same thing for thousands, if not tens of thousands of people over these years. And to give it its kind of due and the recognition that I think, given all the other universities and colleges in this area, many of them ultra high profile because they have basketball teams and football teams, that had to be important too. It's like, it's not like Northern Illinois University, like Rodney Dangerfield, didn't get any respect, but to help get it the respect it deserves.
When I was a freshman, the school essentially served white ethnic students from the Northwest side, mostly, you know, Taft, Foreman, Schurz High School, some of the suburban schools, and that was its identity. And these were working-class students, first-generation students, who left campus almost en masse at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to go to their jobs.
Yep.
And so getting a student life and a student awareness and identity was a great challenge to the university. They didn't stick around for the clubs. There was no real existing athletic program. In 1970, they started the football club, but it wasn't a team.
Yeah,
and they played at Winnemac Park and so on. And so the campus would go empty for most of the afternoon. And then slowly, as the decades evolved, it became international in scope. And this began in the 1990s under the inspired leadership of a past president, Dr. Salmi Steinberg, who recognized that the future of Northeastern was tied to crossing international borders.
Interesting. Interesting.
And the first student exchange program commenced in the early 90s when, with Russia, of all places, former President Gordon Lamb initiated a student exchange and was a visiting scholar to Russia. And then the face of Northeastern really begins to change, I think, in the mid-1980s is the beginning point, and then accelerating through the
90s. When you were there, you helped change it.
Well,
you're not going to take credit.
No, I was just a student. I was a workaday student, yeah. And I did some work for the student newspaper, and I led some tours around campus. That was the extent of my involvement because I had to get to my job at Sears Roebuck.
Right.
You know, but it was really the administration and the high quality of the faculty that I think accounted for the remarkable transformation of Northeastern in the 90s. And what are we today as far as the U.S. News and World Report, Mike? I mean,
we're recognized as the number one most diverse public university in the Midwest.
Is that right?
We're also known as the number one school for adult learners, number one safest campus in the state of Illinois, number three in the country. We're mostly known for just how diverse we are. We have roughly...
How many students? I mean, I need to ask all these basic questions. How many students are there now?
About 9,500, full and part-time. When the school opened
graduate
up...
Graduate and undergraduate?
Yes.
When the school opened in September of 1961, the original enrollment was 1,764 students.
Wow.
At its peak... In the 1990s, it topped out at over 12,000. But see the constraints, the physical constraints of the campus, at least the main campus. We have three. But the main campus, we're hemmed in, and
no question.
Adding new buildings is a problem, and that has hindered the continuous growth.
Mike, when you were at some other job and you were, we got to take a break, but you guys are staying on. I'll be back with Mike Dizon, who is the Chief Marketing Communications Officer of Northeastern Illinois University, and Richard Lindberg, the prolific author who has spent 5 years, well, not 5 years writing it, but a few years writing Northeastern Illinois University, the first 150 years. And just if you're getting a sense from hearing these two guys, I cannot wait to start reading this book. Mike just gave me a copy, and it's a Chicago story, ladies and gentlemen. It's a Chicago story about, can you just think of how many people learned at Northeastern. We'll be right back.
I once was a tool of oppression, as green as a sucker could be, and monopolies banded together.
Welcome back. That's Pete Seeger singing from a CD called American Industrial Ballads, because tomorrow is Labor Day. And yes, you can have a picnic and you can go to the beach, but remember, it's a day that's meant to celebrate the working people of this country. My guest, Richard Lindberg, has been working for some years on a fabulous book, Northeastern Illinois University, the first 150 years, and Mike Dizon, a former Tribune slave, as I am, is the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer for Northeastern. Mike, what was it that appealed to working for Northeastern, if I can ask you? You came there about 3 years ago.
I did, and between the time I worked at the Chicago Tribune and Northeastern, I worked at two other universities, both of which were private, both of which were local. One was Northwestern University, the other was Dominican University,
sure,
in the River Forest area. And what I found so appealing about Northeastern was really not the fact that it's public, you know, which was very different from my previous universities, but it's a very unique student body. And there's something about the culture there that I found so different from anywhere else that I had worked at. These are folks who really take college seriously. I tell everybody that my two favorite days of the year are our commencement ceremonies, the one that we host in December, the one that we host in May. And it's my favorite because it's an incredibly emotional time, not only for the graduates who walk
the families,
for their families and for their friends who supported them, either financially, emotionally. It's really it's so gratifying to see that, and it reminds me why I and so many of my colleagues continue to work there, and you won't find a more committed faculty and staff, I mean, just the entire community,
yeah,
alumni, friends, donors, students.
You have, and Richard Lindberg, you have, we were just going through it off air, some unbelievably distinguished, in addition to you and your wife, some terribly distinguished alums.
We have a number of former city council members.
Well, that's not that distinguished. even though there's some good aldermen, and Richard works for a very good one and the longest serving alderman in the history of the city council, correct?
Yes, Alderman Ed Burke. I'm his speechwriter.
Yes.
But we have in that group Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who came into Northeastern probably about a year after I was done. He helped found the Union of Puerto Rican Students. He was politically active, and he got his foundation here at Northeastern. We've had Warner Saunders of WMAQ-TV, Robert Jordan of WGN, a number of poets, a number of authors, musicians, June Sawyers, noted Chicago historian and author. It's a roster. I think a very notable roster
of
people who've made their bones in Chicago.
When you were researching the book, and again, I haven't read it yet because it just arrived in my lap today, Did you talk to many alums in researching the history? You must have talked to a few.
Yes, I did. I worked with the Northeastern Alumni Association, and that is a marvelous group of people. And the first thing they did was bring together a group of alums from Chicago Teachers College South, our sister school.
Yeah.
Graduates from the 1940s and 1950s, and we had a dinner. And I interviewed each of them individually, and
they were
sharing with me the stories of going to the Englewood campus. And for $20 a semester, that's what they paid. This was in the 50s during the teacher shortage
still.
And the baby boom. They got themselves a full college education with the pledge of agreeing to become a teacher in the Chicago public school system. So they got their career mapped out for them, and it was only $20 a semester.
Oh, my.
And Chicago Teachers College South, of course, that was the new name for the old normal school.
Yeah, sure.
But the big split occurs in 1960 when, because of overcrowding of the schools and the constant demand for teachers, you and I, Rick, were kids back then.
Yeah.
But what I did not know in my research was that you had so many overcrowded schools that you literally had eighth grade students teaching the first graders because they didn't have anybody to teach.
It was
an explosion after World War II, and that necessitated the creation of a Northside campus. And
one of
the interesting stories about the location at Bryn Mawr in St. Louis, it was adjacent to the grounds of the old Chicago Parental School, which was a kind of a quasi-reform school. It was for truants, and it was put out in the country at a time when
that
the neighborhood didn't quite reach.
Yeah, yeah.
And then during World War II, they had after World War II, they built metal Quonset huts on that location for displaced people coming back from Europe after the war. You had metal Quonset huts, and then those were removed, and there was an empty field. And Benjamin C. Willis, who was a controversial...
Willis Wagons.
Yeah. Oh, Willis Wagons, yes, absolutely. The controversial Chicago Public School superintendent identified this as the ideal location for the North Side extension of the South Side Teachers College.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating. Mike, what else? You must be, as the head of the chief marketing and communications officer... To celebrate this 150 years, are there big plans beyond? I think the book itself is celebration enough, but you're going to take advantage of this anniversary. You know,
oh, that? Definitely.
What do you have planned?
Well, not only am I the chief marketing and communications officer, I'm actually the co-chair.
That's right, the co-chair of the
NEIU 150, which is our nickname for our sesquicentennial celebration. Not many people can say sesquicentennial. It's sort of a difficult word.
Yeah.
But NEIU 150 is what we're calling it, and it's essentially a year-long really an academic year-long celebration that's going to be kicked off on September 15th and 16th. On a weekend that is known as NEIU Weekend. It's sort of a new tradition at Northeastern. It's essentially our homecoming. And on the 15th and 16th, we have a number of fun activities, family events, including a fall festival, a family picnic, and then a more formal gala coming up. And you know that Rich Lindbergh is going to be there talking a little bit about his book, signing books, and it'll be available for sale there. But we're really excited about this. We'll have events planned throughout the year. You know, 150-year anniversary only comes once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
We're going to celebrate it right in an appropriate way for our community.
Well, that's great. It gives you this chance to punctuate the place this university has in Chicago. I'm all for that. You can get all sorts of information, ladies and gentlemen. It's a very easy website, NEIU.edu. See, Northeastern Illinois University, NEIU.edu. And people can, I'm assuming, through that website, too, order copies of the book.
Yeah, and if you want to find an easier way, neiu.edu/150.
Okay.
And you'll find instruction, not only more information about the book and about Rich Lindbergh, the author, but instructions on how they can buy that.
That's great. And how they can also, I just go to the regular website and start to, if you're a graduate, or even if you went there and had to leave for some reason, I mean, that a place like that will work its way into your heart in the way, you know, a Notre Dame might too, I suppose, but I got problems with Notre Dame. But this is a place where so many first-generation college graduates went.
Yeah, many of our 80, 90,000 graduates who have earned their degree from Northeastern fall into that category.
How are your alums? Are they active? Do you have an active alumni?
We do. The Alumni Association was reinvigorated at the beginning of the new millennium. The first one came in the 1970s, and it went fallow.
Yeah, sure.
It took a recognition by the university that the community of alums could actively support the school. The challenge was they didn't have the same traditional college experience of, say, somebody who goes to Notre Dame or Michigan. They didn't have the same connection because they were commuter students.
Exactly.
So how deep was their loyalty to the school? But we have seen, especially in the last couple of years with the budget crisis in Springfield, that the alums have risen to the challenge. There have been a number of challenge grants that have been launched, and our alums have come through. It's still the process of re-engagement is ongoing, but we have an alumni head, Damaris Tapia, who has done a wonderful job of bringing back people to campus. And one of the strategies was to even include the Southside graduates.
That's great.
So that they have a sense of identity and belonging that they can join with us. And, of course, the Southside campus is today Chicago State.
Right, right. Yeah. Beleaguered because of budget. Beleaguered for a lot of reasons.
Tragic story.
Yeah. Stay for a few more minutes, you guys. Hear the news again, and then I'm going to ask you a couple more questions, and then I'll let you go, and then I can go home and read this book.
Okay. When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, oh, the farmer is the man who feeds them all. If you'll only look and see, I think you will agree that the farmer is the man who feeds them all. Oh, the farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit.
Pete Seeger, ladies and gentlemen, from American Industrial Ballads in honor of Labor Day, which is tomorrow. We have a few more minutes with Mike Dyson, who is the Chief Marketing and Communications Officer, as well as the co-chair of the Sesquicentennial Committee. And it's sesquicentennial means 150 years, and that is in the title of Richard Lindbergh's latest book, Northeastern Illinois University, The First 150 Years. I have not read it yet because it's so hot off the presses that it's burning a hole in my briefcase. They brought it in here. Richard, before I'm going to ask you first, Mike, what would surprise listeners most to learn, without reading the book yet, to learn about Northeastern Illinois University?
Oh, wow. What a great question. So two things, really. One is, as I was reading it, I found really surprising, maybe you noted this too, Rich, that how history repeats itself.
Yes.
And how just even the characters, the personalities, you sort of see them come and go. The second thing that I got out of the book was I finished that book really with an even stronger sense of pride in the institution. I finished the book feeling like, boy, there really isn't any challenge that is so insurmountable. I mean, we've been around for 150 years.
That says
we'll
a great deal.
Around for another 150. That, you know, the past 2 years with the state budget crisis has been really difficult.
Oh, I'm sure the challenges.
But it was a replay of what happened in 1931.
Yeah.
The normal school itself was almost closed down in the height of the
Depression.
The Great Depression.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also feel like it's a reflection of our students. You know, if we can survive, it's in part because we take inspiration from the 80,000 students who have left the university with a degree. We're hoping that many of them will show up at NEIU weekend on the 15th and
16th. Yeah, sure.
Like I said, it's an incredible book. And no matter where you're coming from or who you are or what your perspective is, whether you have an affiliation with the university or not. It's an interesting read, and I think people will enjoy it.
Richard, what's the problem? You obviously had some knowledge of the place just because you're a historian and you went there and you majored in history. What surprised you most in researching and writing this book?
Well, that's a challenging question. I think that I was aware of it. Of course, I'd been off campus for many years.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The cultural and demographic change of the university from the time I graduated and got my bachelor's degree in 1974 to the new millennium now. I mean, this university is a United Nations of people. So different than my first glimpse of it in 1974.
As you said, in yours it was mostly right. White working class kids.
Right,
from
white ethnics from the northwest side of Chicago. But we also have two campuses. We have our El Centro campus off of Kimball, and we have the Jacob Carruthers Center, which is down on Oakwood Boulevard on the south side. So we have three active campuses, and they serve varying constituencies of people. But it's the international flavor of the school that is, to me, the biggest one of the biggest surprise, the most transformative thing, I think.
That would also be, not to act like a PR guy for the university, but that would also, I like the size of it. It's not Ohio State. There aren't 40,000 people there. There's an intimacy to it, but also that world nature. That's the kind of world we're going to be living in, this cross-cultural, cross-thing that you can get to know that kind of scene on a much more intimate level while you're absorbing knowledge, you're also absorbing societal
stuff. It's a metaphor of globalization. And it began in the mid-1990s and with echoes and stirs, and now it is it's the motto, work in the city.
Learn in the city and lead in the world.
Yes, that's the motto of the university.
Wow.
And I anticipate that it'll become even more international once word starts to get out that we have a residence hall. And big part of the reason why we have it is not only because our students told us that they want.
Because it's hard to take a bus back to Thailand every day. It's hard to commute from
It was a gamble, but
sure.
It's one that's going to pay off. We have the Nest, as it's called, which is on campus. And then the other building is going to be at the intersection of St. Louis or Bryn Mawr and Kimball Avenue.
Yeah.
So it's going to be – we're finally expanding off of the grid that we have had. And over the years, one of the other things was the controversy with the neighbors because there was never enough parking.
Sure.
And as the university grew from 1,700 students to 10,000, you can imagine, all the difficulties.
No question. But it is a nice little section of Chicago. There's no doubt about it. Mike Dyson, keep me up to date on other events going on for the sesquicentennial, because I'm sure they're going to be all during the next year, starting September.
Our big one is starting September 15th and 16th, and we're going to – so, like I said, it's a year-long celebration. We expect to cap it off around May or so with another bookend event. And while the event that's taking place on the 15th and 16th is sort of a retrospective look at our last 150 years, we're really excited about – or equally excited about – the May event, which we intend to focus on the next 150 years.
Oh, interesting.
Northeastern pays a lot of attention to and acknowledges its history the past 15 decades, but just as much we are interested in the future.
Sure.
And so the May event will be more visionary. It'll be not just what the next 150 years could look like for Northeastern, but for Chicago in general. And
yeah.
We have the faculty who have that vision, and we expect that they're going to be a big part of that.
That's great. You better do a second printing of this book, I'll tell you that right now, if you're going to do another big event in May. Richard, you can really be quite – I'm excited to read the book, not only because just from talking to the two of you, it tells a very exciting story that is
interwoven with politics.
Is a Chicago, yeah. If Mike McDonald's in the book, then how can, Mike McDonald and Francis Parker in one book, how can you miss? And the fact that you don't talk much about meeting your wife in there,
No,
but he did. Richard did meet his wife. It's a full service university for Richard Lindbergh. I will tell you that. Richard, congratulations. You can be really proud of yourself.
Thank you, Rick.
I think you can. And Mike, it's great to see you. And
good seeing you too.
Take advantage of this book. I think you're at a very, very interesting place at Northeastern Illinois University.
Sure.
The book is Northeastern Illinois University, the first 150 years. You can go to neiu.edu to learn much more about it. You people are smart. You'll be able to find all the 150th anniversary stuff. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank
greatly, greatly appreciate it, and happy Labor Day to you.